League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Let's get going, because I'm genuinely packing tonight.
Oh, yeah?
You're all... Hello, welcome to Season 2, Episode 23 of the Tottenham Way podcast. Dan, open your beer. I'm Tom, I'm your host. The sound you just heard was Dan.
Hello, mate.
You all right?
Very well, thanks.
And we're also rejoined by Ollie Lister. Hello, Ollie.
Hello.
You all right?
No, very well, thank you.
It's been a while since you've been on, actually, isn't it?
I can't remember the last time I was on.
Yeah, must have been. A couple of admin bits. Sorry we're late this week. A, we couldn't be bothered to do one before Sunderland. B, I kind of messed up the calendar. Dan's nodding because he wants me to apologise, which won't happen. But we're going to be on a Wednesday night. It's Thursday. Apologies. You can still enjoy it. The other bit of news as well is that Ryan Mason is at home, isn't he? He's out of hospital.
He is, yeah.
Says he feels very lucky to be alive, which is quite a strong statement. I know we all knew it was quite serious, but it's quite a strong statement that.
More I read about it, the more I sort of raise my eyebrows and think, wow, this was really serious.
Yeah, I think they handled it quite well, actually,
yeah.
In the end. But there was a show of support at the weekend, wasn't there, was it T-shirts? And then...
Yeah, in the warm-up before the match.
The FA Cup game.
Yeah.
And Mickey Hazard on the pitch at half-time was talking about... Was it specifically for that? I didn't actually go, and so I didn't see this, but...
Yeah, he got the crowd singing for him and was recording it, I believe.
Yeah, I think he was going from White Hart Lane to the hospital to visit.
Okay.
And he filmed a video on his phone of everyone singing, "There's Only One Ryan Mason." It was quite a nice moment.
He's quite close in a way, isn't he?
Yeah, he's quite tight with Mason. I think Mason came through some kind of coaching program that Mickey was running, whatever it was, like 15 years ago. Mm. And so he's known him since he was like 7 or 8 or something. So yeah, I think they're getting well.
Yeah, it's quite a nice touch. We can go on to the game itself now. 4-3 against Wickham. We won't spend too long on this because it feels like ages ago, particularly with Sunderland having been played as well. Quite a lot been made of the team that we put out against them. No surprises. We've spoken about it on this pod numerous times about the changes that we make for cup games. But 9 changes that we made to the team. Who survived from the previous game? Was it
Dyer and Vimmer?
Vimmer. Oh yeah, it was City, wasn't it? Of course, the game before.
Yeah,
interesting one.
So Dyer. It wasn't three at the back against Wickham, was it?
No.
So Dyer moved into midfield. Mm. Vimmer stayed at centre back with Carter Vickers, having both started in a back three at City.
Yeah, but it wasn't. I mean, we may have won the game, but it was not a very convincing performance, let's say, particularly from those at the back.
No, it wasn't. And it was one of those performances where if Spurs had won comfortably 2-0, which I think everyone expected them to, no one would have been talking about the 9 changes and it wouldn't have been relevant. It would have been the right thing to do because it was a League 2 team and it was at home. And obviously those players were good enough to beat Wickham, but as it was, I think the selection and the rotation became a really big issue.
It's too much in one go, isn't it, do you think?
I'm not necessarily on board with that. I just think
That's what I mean. It's only too much in one go because of the way they played.
It was how casual the players were.
Yeah.
So Zoko's touch was ridiculous.
We were 2-0 down at half-time, is that right?
Yeah.
There
was about 2 good performances on the pitch, and that was Winks and Son. I mean, everyone else was...
I suppose that says a lot that they're probably the closest to the first team, apart from Dyer, obviously. But Son and Winks are probably the only ones challenging our first 11, if all fit, in our entire squad. Agree, disagree?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think relax is a good way of describing it. In fact, that was the word that Son used afterwards. He said, we all were a bit too relaxed in the first half. And I think with glorious hindsight, that's kind of obvious because Wickham were bang up for it and they were using all the tricks in the book. They were quite dirty. They were quite snide. There were lots of shirt pulling, yeah, and sort of shin kicking. And they were positive and direct. I really liked what they did. Villa came to the lane in the fourth round and third round, and played one striker and had Bonlahor, put men behind the ball and just tried to sneak a goal, and it was never going to happen. Wickham came, put two strikers right up on Carter Vickers and Vimmer and played direct attacking football and really bothered Spurs.
Yeah, it was a bit throwback.
Their goals were really well taken, apart from the penalty, which is expect to score,
but
their
first cracking finish and the header as well.
The header was great build up. They took advantage of, because Trippier went off injured, didn't he?
Yeah.
Which I suppose is to our credit that we actually did keep going with 10 men, 3-2 down in the last minute. But Poch has clearly got a standard that he expects no matter where he sees you in the squad, second string or first. Said after the game that if you can't play this type of game, we will have a problem. How did he deliver that? Was it in a? Was he pissed off?
I wasn't in the room actually. I was in the mix zone, and he's doing his post-match press conference. I can only imagine that it wasn't quite as forthright and dramatic as that, but he kind of slipped it in. But the fact is, he still said it, and before the game, he suggested that some of these players needed to prove their long-term futures. I think he said, when you play for Tottenham, you play for Tottenham. Meaning every game, no matter who the opposition is important when you're playing for Spurs. And I think he said something along the lines of, you need to prove you can be at the club long term. And I think even though he's backtracked on that since, and he's sort of said, I trust the whole squad, it's very difficult to play in this type of games, and he's mellowed a bit, I think he might have made up his mind about some of those players in that game. And I genuinely think that is the beginning of the end for some of them.
Okay.
I'd agree. I thought Onuma, for one, was...
Yeah, I think Onuma...
He looks technically fine, but he seems to want to have 1,000 touches, slide everything down, and you look at the comparison between him and Winks, who have kind of broken through around the same time, and Winks is just years ahead of him. Mm. Onuma, you know, looks quite tidy, but did nothing right. Did nothing really, just kind of went through the motions and slowed everything down and was trying too hard to impress of anything.
I think that's the difference when you... Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, it's a bit of an unfair comparison, this, but Onuma has now had 20, 30 appearances, albeit as a sub or a starter, where he's had enough time to do something. Mm. If you think about what Kane did when he was breaking into the team, scored in his first three starts, and then at the beginning of Pochettino, every time he was either a sub or a starter in the Europa League, he was banging in a goal. Mm. Obviously, he's a striker, so it's easier to quantify.
But you call that an unfair example, but Harry Winks is... Yeah, to bring on that.
I like Onuma. I want all young players to do well, but he hasn't done anything.
No, he's not really taken
that
a chance.
That was a chance for him. It wasn't just him, though. I think it might have been the beginning of the end from Kudu.
It's not really been the beginning of the beginning, is it?
In fact, the beginning of the end was probably when he signed. Vimmer, Sissoko...
Really?
Sissoko was so bad. He was the most casual of the lot. And I know he's quite a calamitous looking player at the best of times, but he was failing to control the ball like a child. You know, it was bouncing off him like it was made of rubber or something.
On the plus side, Janssen came on, made an impact.
Well, yeah, he's got two assists, really, and a goal, because he won the penalty. Scored it, and I think it's easy to underestimate that how big a moment that was. Mm. He needed to score that, didn't he? And you can easily say, oh, it's just a penalty, but it's still a pressure moment where Spurs' cup status was kind of on the line, and he put it away. Mm. And then he set up Son's winner. So I think all in all, a good call from Poch not to start him. He said that there was too much pressure on him to start, and it worked. And yeah, good on Vinny for... but for taking his chance.
Sorry, you just heard that, Ollie's.
Ollie's yeah, it just happens every time I come on air.
A bit of a sideways burp there, but we move on. We had the FA Cup draw on Monday, which is Fulham away. A couple of mixed memories about Fulham away. I think we've won 4-0 and lost 4-0 in the cup there. The first one, I think Keane and Berbatov scored two each.
Is that when Berbatov did that outside of the boot chip? Which is one of my favourite goals he scored for
us. In the brown kit. And yeah, we absolutely obliterated him. Equally, 2011, I think it was, we went to Fulham, were 4-0 down in half an hour, I think it was. Dawson was sent off. We were absolutely awful. Like, really, really awful. So who knows? Who knows what it could be? I quite like the draw. I'm quite happy with that. I think it's quite nice to have an away game in there. It's not the toughest game that we could have got, but it will be a test because I think they're doing all right, aren't they, Fulham, in Championship?
6 points off playoffs or something.
Yeah, something like that, which I mean, they've been terrible for a couple of years.
I think they've been struggling to score, but seem quite like solid mid-table.
It'll be an interesting game, I think. But it's sandwiched in between the two Ghent ties, isn't it? And it's interesting that when you talk about some players maybe have missed their chance, there's three games there where a lot of those fringe players will expect to at least play, you know, at least 90 minutes. You'd probably expect 180 off a few of them. But it does give us a chance to play a fairly strong team in all three or at least two of the three games, do you think?
I think the FA Cup's starting to heat up, isn't it? And we're what, four games away from the final now? Get through this, we're in the quarters, and I think we might be starting to look at that as kind of thing. Maybe
as well, like if we got at home, we could potentially get one of Derby, Leicester, Millwall,
Sutton.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but there's a lot of those crap playing each other. Equally, we could get City away or something like that. But it could shape up to be. So we've got to take that opportunity, haven't we? Would you play a stronger team in the FA Cup or Europa League, or is it not really sort of mutually exclusive?
The Europa League just seems miles away from winning it.
Mm.
It's a long slog still. It's only the first knockout round, and the FA Cup, get through this tie, and you can start thinking about the final. I wonder if Poch might be tempted to prioritise that over Europa League.
That little spell will be really interesting because it is a good opportunity for Poch to play quite a strong team in all three, by which I mean not 9 or 10 changes, but kind of 4 or 5 changes from the regular 11 for each game. And if he's clever about it and rests the right senior players, there's no reason why it shouldn't have an impact on the league. And then when those three games are done, you can see what competition you're still left in.
Yeah.
And say, okay.
And see who's impressed as well. We're talking about last chance saloon. I think he's most likely to give Onuma more minutes out of everyone.
I said it's the beginning of the end, but it's not the end. Like there are these players I've mentioned are still going to play in those games, I think, because the window's shut and there's no choice. But I think with Pochettino being the kind of ruthless operator that he is, he will have looked at that performance against Wickham and just thought, this is not good enough. The mentality's not there, the attitude's not there, and he doesn't forget easily, does he?
No.
So I think they'll play, all those players will play in one or both or all three of those games, but I'm not necessarily sure they'll survive the summer.
I think just to go back to Onuma, I think it'll be good to see him starting in a team that isn't full of 9-10 changes. To see him next to Wanyama or Dyer in a central midfield, which is apparently his position. I'm not 100%, but that's what I've heard. Like, we keep sticking him on the wing, and it doesn't look like his position, even if it's...
Well, he was playing centrally on Saturday.
Was he a number 10 or...?
Yeah, probably more advanced of the two.
I always thought he was a 10 because of his Twitter handle, which is Onuma 10. But everyone tells me he's an 8. You know, people who watch the youth team say he's an 8, so I don't know. But it would seem strange to me to put 10 in your Twitter handle if you didn't want to play number 10.
Don't know.
Maybe there's nine other Josh Onumas.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
yeah, that's fair. Let's do a quick keep or sell for the fringe players. One word answers. We'll start with Ollie. Vorm.
Keep.
Dan.
Keep.
Really?
He's a...
I'd like to see us go and buy a young British or English keeper.
British.
I don't know. I'd
really
like
embracing
to see
this,
a young English keeper.
Why does it matter where they're from?
Well, it doesn't really. It's just nice. I think we've got a good core there. I think it'd be nice to see a young...
I think he's about as good a backup keeper as you could hope for. And we've got Powell. if he's really a thing.
Yeah, or even give some minutes to him.
I would keep. I'll tell you why. Just I don't necessarily think he's good enough. He always seems to have a mistake in him and costs us cups. But there are other players on this list that I can see in front of me that I'd rather sell than him. And I don't think you want to be disrupting the squad by, you know, getting shipping out 6 or 7 people.
Okay.
So on from that now, basis, I would keep him.
Okay. From now, one word answers.
Right. Got it.
Trippier.
Keep.
Keep.
Keep. Davis.
Sell.
Keep.
Sell. And I'm going to explain why later.
No, one word answers.
Later.
All right. Fine.
When we get to Davis.
Right.
Vimmer.
Sell.
Sell.
Sell. Winks.
Keep.
Keep.
Keep. Onoma.
Sell.
Sell.
Keep for now. Nkudu.
Sell.
Sell.
Sell. Sissoko.
Keep.
China.
Yes. Yeah. Son.
Keep.
Keep.
Keep. Janssen.
Sell.
Keep.
Keep, probably. Okay, that was fun. We'll come on to a few. We'll get into the ins and outs of exactly why we've asked that a little bit later. But we'll move on to Sunderland because it was probably the biggest game that we've had recently. But it was a load of old crap, wasn't it? So we went back to a back four. A reward for Son, his goals obviously in the cup. And Vimmer's obviously really badly out of form. I think he probably looked at it, thought there's no way that we can do a three at the back. Here, probably no need to do it, do you think?
I think it was sort of further evidence that Pochettino keeps saying that it doesn't matter about the formation. Whenever you ask him about it, he says, oh, you don't understand, I can't explain it to you, but it's not about the formation, it's about animations and blah 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 blah. And I do think that's true in a sense. I think he wants to be able to play in different ways so he can put the most informed 11 on the pitch, and that's really good way of looking at it, I think. It doesn't always work. But that's what he did at Sunderland. I think he dropped Vimmer and put Son in and changed the formation because Son had scored a couple of goals and Vimmer had been crap again.
I don't think a change of formation is fine to bring up, but there's no doubt that that front four, or that 11 full stop, should be good enough to go away to the league's worst team.
Yeah, I was probably pretty unhappy with...
Yeah, you were, weren't you? You were quite grumpy with it. Take us through it, Ollie.
So... Vimmer has not been in good form, but against Watford he played in that back three and was absolutely fine. And the good thing about the three at the back formation, it frees up Eriksen and Ali to effectively go wherever they like. In the four at the back formation, they're kind of assigned to starting positions. So he had Eriksen on the right wing, Son on the left, and they didn't have that much freedom. And then you look how kind of stagnant we were up front. I think that actually kind of hindered them somewhat. They didn't have that license to roam as much. I was just also kind of pushing Rose and Walker back. I just thought it was like counterproductive.
But this was the formation Spurs used last season.
But it's not the formation.
I don't disagree with you. I'm playing devil's advocate. Spurs played 4-2-3 on for the whole of last year, barring one game at Watford, and were mostly brilliant.
But we've been getting great results playing our best attacking football with the three at the back formation recently, and obviously it's unleashed Walker and Rose as far more attacking players. And I just don't understand the kind of change in tact for that, for the sake of putting Son in, who played nearly 100 minutes, quite a long game, Wickham, days before. So it wouldn't have been as fresh. Okay, I get that he would have been warranting a start. I just think it would have been better placed for him to be an option off the bench, or, you know, drop someone else. I also don't think that Sunderland pose enough threat at us going forward to worry about Vimmer, Alderweireld and Dyer at the back. They would have coped with that easily.
I think that's fair.
It just seemed an odd decision for me.
Don't disagree with
that. Yeah, and I think the subs thing is quite important as well, because Son, it would have been harsh, a little bit harsh to leave him out. And I think I said before the game that Sunderland away is the type of game that Son goes into and scores two. And, you know, it has one of those games that he does have. But it did leave us really short of options from the bench. We had Sissoko and Janssen as our attacking players to come off the bench, which, no matter what you think of them, they are limited at the moment. And without that Son from the bench, it wasn't a lot to change it. Whereas if we could have brought on Son on 70 minutes if we needed to, if we were still at 0-0, then there's something else for Sunderland's back line to think about. In the end, they kept Kane quiet. Ali was nowhere near Kane, which is the reason for his success over the last month or so. He was nowhere near him, and I don't think Sunderland really shepherded him away from Kane. He just seemed to be popping up on the left a bit too much, and it just felt as if we weren't playing the game properly, if you know what I mean. It was a bit of a thick performance all round. Worried? One of those things?
No, I'm not worried. I mean, there were other issues with me. I thought Dembele, although looked quite good, it was not the game for him. I thought Winks would have been far more, should have come on at some point, actually. Dembele is amazing at passing through players, but he doesn't often give the ball and run. And I think maybe actually in the situation, that formation, taking Dembele off for Winks might have given us a bit more thrust going forward, a few more runs from midfield, because you don't see Dembele get in the box very often or try to run beyond players. You know, he'll dribble past them and then, you know, release it. And he's probably the best in the league, if not Europe, at doing that. But he was just kind of going past their mid-four and then into a bank of five.
But how much of that is Sunderland not? It's not us. You know, there's only so much you can do if you're a central midfield player and you break through one line and then you've got another line of five.
But I just don't think Dembele is the type of player to look and run beyond. And I think Winks has got a bit more enthusiasm in that regard.
I think I disagree with that completely, because I think when you've got the four at the back, you've got less of a base to build on, because the three gives you a real base to play out. And Dembele is so important for picking up the ball and kind of starting the attacks, and beating players is exactly what you need in that type of game, because when they have got two banks, he can bypass one of those banks and you're halfway there. The problem was not getting the ball to the final third, it was using it in the final third, I think. In the first half, there were so many times where Dembele did something great, like beat someone, out-muscled someone, won the ball back, and he'd play it into the final third, and you know, Walker or Rose or Eriksen or Ali or Kane or Son, and the last pass was just lacking, or they're trying to do too much, or they'd lose it. And I just don't think the problem was getting the ball there. I think it was using it.
My point is, Dembele would then, like, you know, he'll release the ball. He won't then go and try.
That's not his job, you know.
That's what I'm saying, as an option, generally, Winks would have gone higher than him.
You've got enough people up there, like, you know, you've got Walker and Rose up there. You've got Kane, obviously. You've got Son, Ali, Eriksen. There's enough players ahead of him to score a goal. The problem in that game was almost, there was just too many of them that were having a bad game. And whether that's because of the formation or if it was just a coincidence that there were a few players having an off day, I don't know. But I felt like the problem was not getting the ball up to them. It was using it. I mean, basically, Spurs were moist, weren't they? I mean, they've been poo-list already this season, and they got moist. Like, he turned it in. I mean, I think I said on Twitter that the Rodwell tackle, I know we've got it in the running order, and we'll come on to it, but I said it was clever, and I meant it, because it was a horrible tackle, but I didn't think it was a red card, honestly. And it really disrupted Spurs, and it stopped a counter, and it also turned the game, and from that moment onwards, when someone's done something like that, it turns the game into more of a battle, and that's exactly what Sunderland wanted.
We surrounded the ref a little bit. Don't see us do that very often.
Yeah,
we really
weren't happy.
And it got the crowd up. And Stadium of Light is a moany old place. Like, there was a couple of times, like every time Barini touched the ball, the whole place was groaning. Mate, how shit
is
this?
So
we are so lucky. Like, there was a bit of a catchphrase amongst me and a few Spurs friends a little while ago. If you weren't watching the game, you used to text, say, like, oh, how are we doing? And they would always come back with, we are so lucky, X is shit. And Barini is that player. He's so bad. We are lucky that he's not. If Defoe had got that chance in the first half, we probably could have lost that game 1-0. The one
just before it, he like miscontrolled in a great position as well.
Went out wide. He's all energy, no end product. Like, he's utter dirge. But, I can't remember what I was going to say. The crowd got whipped up into a bit of a frenzy. And for 10 minutes, we just looked a bit sorry for ourselves. And then we just didn't really recover, did we? And again, not having those substitutions or the available substitutions, it is a bit of a problem. We've only scored two goals from Our substitutes have only scored two goals all season. And
Both Son,
yeah. And I have to admit, I don't know the comparative stats from seasons before, but that does seem low, does it not? It
does seem low.
For a team that scores quite a few.
I got panned on here, I remember, about 2 months ago for saying I didn't think the score...
By me?
By whoever, you and whoever was on, for saying I didn't... I think it was Jim, actually, for saying... I don't think the squad's any stronger this year than it is last year.
Yeah, it's probably me.
And then I backtracked on it quite shamefully. I was like, oh, actually, you guys have done. But you look at it and it would have been quite nice to have Nasser Chadli on the bench, wouldn't it, against Sunderland?
I think it would have been nice to have Son on the bench.
He knows how to score a goal.
Yeah, that's fair. That is
Neville
fair.
Neville Bentaleb knows how to score a goal.
Apparently.
Scored a few for Schalke.
Yeah, top scorer.
I feel a bit for Pochettino because Nkudu was injured, so we don't know, but he wouldn't have been on the bench, would he? I feel like he has been a bit hamstrung by the transfer business. I mean, Janssen... is having a bad time.
Yeah, Janssen was done early.
Janssen, I still keep him and I stick with that.
Do you not think maybe Janssen could have come on earlier?
He could have done, yeah, but I mean...
No, I know I just said I'd sell him, but while he's here...
I got Pochettino thinking though. I mean, like, on current form, in current state, I mean, who do you bring on? I mean, Eriksen's more likely to get a goal. Ali, you never take off because he's always got a goal in. You're not taking off Kane.
I'd have taken off Dembele.
He did eventually, didn't he?
But for Janssen, I thought Winks came on. I just think we could have sacrificed. I mean, they offered nothing after that Barini chance, let alone second half. After that Barini chance, they offered absolutely
didn't have a shot in the
nothing.
Second half.
Yeah. So I just think we could have probably foreseen that and thought, you know what, we might need something to change it up because Sissoko came on and just did what Sissoko does, which was get his head down, start running. No direction to it, and it's a couple of crosses that were absolutely terrible.
It was that one pass where he just didn't look.
But a lot of them did that. To be fair, a lot of them did that.
I know, I got the daggers out for him after.
Yeah, yeah, you're not.
I've been a champion of his, but he's doing his best to.
Yeah, it was pretty bad, wasn't it?
Embarrass me.
Equally bad, Rose's injury. We don't know anything about it, do we? And I know Ben Pearce said on Twitter that he had his knee in a brace. The same knee that he had in a brace after City. Do we know anything about it, Dan? Can you please don't tell us that it's long term,
guys? A few of the newspapers were saying it was possible cruciate ligament damage.
We all thought that about Toby as well, didn't we?
I don't know. Pochettino's doing a press conference tomorrow, Friday. So by the time you've listened to this, you might already know. So I don't think there's much point in speculating too much, except to say it would obviously be horrendous.
In terms of importance, who do you think... Is there anyone above Rose, apart from Kane, that in terms of the importance of the squad, in terms of who can come in for him? Like, I think Rose is up there with the irreplaceable members of our team. I love Walker.
I'm not sure about that.
Even Walker, I think... Really?
Lloris is up there, surely.
Lloris is up there. Definitely up there. But I think
Lloris,
the gap.
Toby,
is...
Kane, Ali. I mean, look, Ben Davies gets a lot of shit, but we're so Spurs fans are so lucky to have those two amazing fullbacks. I mean, if you look at Liverpool, who are in roughly the same position, they've played James Milner at left back for the whole season. It's not like he's this incredible attacking force who's getting up the flank. I think we've got used to having Rose and Walker, and we're sort of taking for granted the fact that we've got these two world class fullbacks. And actually, having Davis in the team for a month, I mean, it would obviously be a massive downgrade, but I don't think it would be quite as bad as losing Alderweireld or Kane or Ali. Or even Eriksen.
Annoyingly, we've had all of those scenarios this season.
I know.
Our injury list.
Do you know what I mean? Did that make any
sense? Yeah, I do know what you mean. I still think the gap between him and who could come in for him. Because with Ali, I suppose no one really does what Ali does. But I think with Ali, you could take out and bring in Son, and you've still got a threat of goals in your team. I just feel like it's so important to the way that we play. It's not just the individuals, it's the system that Rose and Walker bring. And having Rose out and putting someone like Ben Davies in, who is just the polar opposite. He's a decent footballer, but he's top. He's like a Southampton.
He walks into any other team below the top six.
I mean, he got a lot of shit, but he hasn't played a lot of football. You know, there was a time about this time last year where Trippie and Rose were coming in. Spurs had a lot of 3-game weeks, and Trippie and Rose were coming in midweek. And they were doing, you know, they were playing consistently. They were doing really well. And around about the time that Trippier scored against Watford, which I think was about February 6th last year, or early February.
It was early February.
There were people saying, you know, there's not a lot between them. So I don't think Davies is anywhere near Rose's standard. But I do think if he had a run of games, if he played every league game for a month, which he might have to, and it's looking that way, then I'd back him to do a decent job. I'd rather have him have him in the team for a month than have to have Sissoko or have to have Janssen as his top centre striker again.
I mean, he hasn't been playing well when he's come in, and his form has been far from what it was last season. So I think maybe he got a point there that hopefully he can play himself into a bit of form. He
was shit against Sunderland. Yeah. I think that's the biggest. If he'd have come in,
look at his qualities. He's good on the ball. Mm. He uses it well, crosses well. And although he hasn't got that pace, he actually gets into quite good attacking positions. And that seemed to have deserted him completely. So
he's not useless. It's just that worry of how much we have to change. It's almost an accommodation.
We can't do that.
The trouble is he's not a wing back.
Mm. You can't play that position.
It sort of negates that formation, which has done work so well. And I mean, there's literally no one else I can possibly think of, maybe Lamella, who could do a job.
Oh God, yeah.
Like in you know, it's not like you can go, oh well, let's you know change so and so to left wing back. Mm. There's just no one.
Should have got Van Aanholt.
I mean, not the worst thing you've ever said.
Not the worst thing you've ever said. Yeah, I'll take that.
Competitive field.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of where it leaves us in a title race and everything like that, it was a missed opportunity on Tuesday, wasn't it? Because someone had to drop points out of Liverpool or Chelsea. But in the end, it turned out that Arsenal also lost at home to Watford. Yeah, so it's hilarious. Did you see it? Cabal scored that
beautiful deflection
twice.
Did that on purpose, I reckon.
Every time he took a free kick for us, when someone set it up for him, it ended up in a different postcode. Like, so for him to keep it down in the first instance is... Well,
he's probably trying to cross it.
And Capoue's run as well. The ex-Spurs boys did us pretty proud, I think.
Gomez made a few good saves as well.
Like Swansea against Liverpool the other week. Anyway. But, so a bit of a missed opportunity. We didn't make up any ground on the top. But, you know, City won, the only team to have won in the top six in the last couple of days. It's not a disaster. Could have been a bit of a disaster, but it's not. But do you feel like have we missed out a little bit there?
Yeah.
Obviously, we have. But then, fortunately, every team around us is thinking we've missed out an opportunity. So it's kind of just a par for everyone, isn't it? And we're fortunate that actually we managed to get away with it. And United slipping up at Hull, to great amusement.
It's an opportunity. It's Sunderland, though, isn't it? So
yeah, that's
you would have had it down as a banker, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's just if it was almost anyone else in the league, even Hull and Swansea, you could say like, oh, they've got new managers. Mm. It was Sunderland under Moyes.
Sunderland always make us play like this, though. I can't remember. I was playing convincingly against Sunderland under Moyes or whoever it was last year for some time. It always seems to be a real scrappy affair that we just stumble across the line. I know we did it this time, but that just seems to be my lasting memory of playing Sunderland.
I think in terms of regrets as well, you know, every season you look at individual results or a couple of results or periods of time that you think, oh, that did for us. But you do wonder if looking back at season is only scoring one goal, getting 4 points against the worst team in the division by a bit of a way now. Like Hull and Swansea actually look like competent football teams. Sunderland haven't, bar about two games so far this season. I do wonder if that's going to be the regret from this season.
Didn't Newcastle finish bottom last year? So on that,
oh, don't,
on that premise, you know, we've actually improved.
Oh, we can't go there, can we? In terms of the title, Dan, how do you feel about it now? You're always very positive about the title.
No, I think Chelsea need to drop points against Arsenal.
Great analysis.
Yeah. For it to stay.
No, you bet. I think if they win that game, it's done.
Really?
Chelsea have the look to me of that, just that focused, sort of determined, ruthless kind of winning machine that actually Leicester weirdly became last year, where they're just not going to stop winning. And I thought the best, obviously, when Spurs beat them, and then it was quickly followed by the Costa thing, I was optimistic that the wheels might come off and that was the chance. But actually, you look at it, and since then, I just think they've responded really well.
They've had like a condensed crisis.
Yeah. And I think, I honestly want Arsenal to beat them, because I think Spurs will finish above Arsenal.
Why did you do this?
No, but come on.
You're an idiot.
Look. Look. I don't like this attitude of... I really don't like it, actually, of like, oh, I almost hope Chelsea beat Liverpool. Let's just consolidate fourth. Like, come on, piss off. Like,
surely a draw is what you want.
No,
we're getting ground
we
on
got,
both.
We've got to try and... Spurs have got to try and
catch
Chelsea.
What would an Arsenal win at Stamford Bridge do for their confidence?
A lot, but I don't care. It's irrelevant. They'll go and lose. They're fragile. They'll still lose at home to someone crap as they did last weekend.
Right. And we are in a different position now.
We haven't lost at home to anyone
at
all.
That is fair, but again, next week we can go... Got Borough on the weekend.
I've gone off on one a bit here, but I still think if Chelsea beat Arsenal at Stamford Bridge, they haven't really got any tough fixtures. I think they've got most of the hardest games out of the way, and that'll be that.
I guess the hope is that they've used like 12 players. Also, they've done what Leicester did. Actually, I think you can do
that when you're not in Europe.
Yeah,
it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Bastards. Ugh, yeah. I don't know. Ollie, you're looking pained at this. You've
got to be frank and realise that Chelsea are clearly in the driving seat, but to call it over after next week's fixtures just seems a little soon and sudden. Given that we were talking about it being February and how much there is left to play.
Yeah,
they have an injury to anyone, a key player of theirs. I know they've got quite pretty decent bench, but someone like Costa, who really drives them forward, and how they'd manage without him might be... I know we're speculating on someone getting injured, but, you know, we can all hope.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anything can happen.
Yeah,
they're going to win
the
league. I don't think it's over yet, and I certainly wouldn't be brave enough to go, we're going to finish above Arsenal on the 2nd of February, but no, as you were.
All right, let's move on, because it's got a bit tense.
I was taking a panning there.
We've actually got quite a nice... nothing wrong with that, Dan. You want to be challenged on your views?
No, I don't. I'm the king of this podcast. You're to agree with me.
Okay, let's do some what you've called Memory Lane, which is a nice little feature which you should have a jingle for. We do it every couple of months. No, but seriously, on this day, 2 years ago, we announced the signing of Dele Alli. He is the 46th most expensive Spurs signing ever. Some examples of the players who have been more expensive than him: Paulinho, of course, Rebrov, Ben Davis, Nkudu, Kirikez, Dos Santos, Didier Zakora, Kyle Naughton, Fazio, and Kevin Prince Boateng. Dele Alli cost us the same amount as Emmanuel Adebayor and Ben Thatcher. And I appreciate that inflation needs to take play a part here, but Ben Thatcher.
He's 5 million quid.
Yeah.
So that was like pounds. Even more.
That was a lot of money back then.
Well, yeah, exactly. For
old
Ben
money.
Thatcher. He was kind of like an angry Ben Davis. Kind of played left back, left centre back, but He was disgusting, really, wasn't he?
Vile man.
Yeah. Anyway.
Pedro Mendes. Dele Alli. Foul.
Dele Alli, 2 years that we've had him. Actually, it's not 2 years. We've had him 18 months because we loaned him straight back to MK Dons, didn't we? is it probably bargain? It's the best value for money that probably Spurs have ever had, surely.
Ooh. Well, Gareth Bale was not that expensive either, was he?
Oh, that's a fair point. Modric as well, I suppose, was only in today's.
But Modric was 40 million. Bale was like 5 million or something in all,
wasn't
it?
Yeah, that's true.
But he's up there.
He's up there. He could. I think he could almost have the same trajectory as Bale. I think he, when Spurs, no, not when, if Spurs eventually sell Alli, he'll probably get a world record fee, I would have thought.
If he carries on.
If he carries on, yeah, the trajectory, that was the caveat. So I think it could be similar to Bale, like 5 million quid to
whatever,
110, 120.
Yeah.
Because he's that good.
We sold Bale like 4 years ago.
Yeah. Was it? And Pogba cost, what, 95?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
But he's a commercial dream as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he was named the most marketable player in the Premier League last year. He is. Yeah, he is the bargain of the century, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. It's be really hard pushed to find anyone else.
I love him.
Not Carl Norton. Carl Norton cost £7 million.
He cost more than Carl Walker. But he came in a joint deal with Walker, so do we know?
I think both of them together came as about 12.
I thought Walker was the cheaper of the two.
They like rated Norton more at the time.
They did, yeah. That's absolutely true.
Walker was a dud. He said recently, actually, that he thought if... someone said recently, it was one of his former coaches, said when he went back on loan to Sheffield United, Spurs weren't that impressed with it. And if Sheffield United had the money, they would have bought him back.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. How different it could have been.
Yeah, would have been a shocker.
Yeah, absolute shocker.
Sheffield United would be good, though.
Yeah, in one area. on this day as well, in 2004, we signed Jermaine Defoe. But we did, after Jermaine Defoe scored his record-breaking 150 goals or something like that. 100, I can't remember. He broke a record, basically. But we did a little bit of a memory lane.
Most goals in Europa League.
He is our top scorer.
Qualifying or something.
He is our top European scorer. He
most goals in a single game as well, was it? Premier League era.
Joint, yeah, with Berber and Shearer.
Berber back at Hotspur Way today.
He was. What's the story behind that, Dan? Or is there no story?
No story.
Is he getting tips from Ericsson on hair
plugs?
Social
visit. former players visit all the time. Okay. Apparently.
Can you imagine if he's a coach?
Who does he know there?
That's what I wondered, though. I mean, it's not like, who's he mates with? Like, Levy?
Yeah, he's not, is he? He must hate
everyone from his era is gone. The only players who were there were Walker and Rose, right?
Yeah, but even then, he wouldn't talk to them. No, I don't think they'd have been there. Walker was well, but Berber left in 2008. Walker joined in like 2009, and
okay,
Rose,
so literally no one.
Rose, maybe, but
maybe club staff or whatever, but it's slightly odd.
It is a bit.
I mean, can you imagine?
Would you take him all day long
to do what?
All day long. What do you mean?
In training,
to do what he's done for the last like 15 years. Walk about and score the odd worldie.
Pochettino's Tottenham, though.
I would bring him on against Sunderland. I'd have brought him on. I'd have brought Berber on.
To lead the press.
We weren't pressing. Yeah. You just need someone in the box to get that bit of magic.
Yeah, I'll take him.
Remember that goal he scored against Reading where it looped up like above the stadium and he just stood there and let it drop onto his foot and he just steered it into the bottom corner. The 6-4 game against Reading. I think it was his hat-trick goal. It just dropped out the sky and it let it fall onto his foot and it just went in the bottom corner. That is what you can do still. Don't need pace to do that, mate.
Apparently he's a really weird man.
Doesn't
Andy Garcia his idol or something as well?
That doesn't strike me as odd at all. That seems quite bang on, really. Doesn't he style himself on him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good bloke. Good bloke. Bloody good bloke. we've gone really off topic here. Speaking of strikers with no pace, though, Crouchy got 100 goals, 100 Premier League goals this weekend, on Tuesday. Fair fucks to Crouchy, basically. Apparently, he scored 37 of his 100 goals for Stoke.
What?
Yeah. He scored fucking loads for him. Scored loads.
The only one
for
I can remember is that Wonder hit.
Against City.
Yeah.
Hell of a goal, wasn't it?
But he's had it in him. He's got it in him. He's scored a few belters in his time. For Liverpool, he scored loads of overhead kicks. Good player, Crouchy. I liked Crouch. And to form a partnership with Van der Vaart, who was this kind of silky, European, sexy guy that we brought in, and then you had big, lanky Crouch with him. But it worked really well. You think of dominating
Europe.
He did
a thing on Stoke TV or whatever it is about his relationship with Van der Vaart, and it was really good, actually. I don't know why they did it, but it was just him gushing about how good he was and saying that he felt like Van der Vaart knew where he was going to head it down before he even jumped, which was amazing. And then you look back at the goal, they sort of cut the interview with some of the goals he scored, and it does actually seem that way. There was, in the first few months of Van der Vaart, there were just loads of like deep Alan Hutton crosses or something. Yeah. Crouchy would just get up, nod it into an area, and Van der Vaart would just be there to finish or just take an unbelievable touch and finish. And it was a great relationship.
It was just so odd. Like, Van der Vaart would never have thought he'd have had to have played with Peter Crouch when Real Madrid a few months before. But it was successful, wasn't it? And in Europe, we I remember when he first came in that Redknapp was talking about, I can't wait to see how many chances Van der Vaart creates for Defoe. And it just didn't happen because it was too perfect with Crouch.
He also scored some pretty important goals for us, didn't he?
Crouch?
Yeah, the City.
Our two biggest goals in recent years.
The Spurs official account is so fond of playing that Crouch goal against City.
Yeah,
it should be.
But it's the Milan one, really, isn't it? That's the...
Yeah.
And he got two against Inter as well. No, one against Inter as well, didn't he? In the 3-1 at home. He was top scorer in our Champions League season as well, with Bale, I think, if you can count the qualifying rounds.
Yeah.
He's good on you, Peter.
Stats attack. All right, let's do some Borough stuff.
Really?
I know. I'm not a massive fan of doing this. But we should mention it. We got them on Saturday. They're 15th in the table. They've not won in 6 Premier League games. Only scored 3 goals in that time. They've only scored 19 this season. They are the lowest scorers in the league behind Hull. Well, behind everyone, but they're one behind Hull. They're not all that, are they, Borough? They don't fancy it away. Is this a perfect game for us to bounce back from a disappointing result against Sunderland with? Because we're 2 games without a win now as well. So,
yeah, definitely. We should absolutely smash them, though they aren't as... open as some of the people that you've just mentioned. They're quite tight at the back. They don't seem to concede too many. I know they've had a couple of 3-0s recently. I know, so that's contradicting everything I'm saying. But they generally, you know, they're getting a lot of 1-0 defeats. It seems to be going forward. Their problem. But we should absolutely destroy them.
I'm not that worried about Negredo, Stuani. The only guy that I'd be a bit concerned about is Traore, who seems to just be out, who terrified us when he came off the bench at the Riverside. Dan, you're looking at me, you don't know who this is, do you?
I don't think I've watched Borough since Spurs beat them 2-1.
You probably don't want to, but he's...
Is it Adama Traore?
Yeah, Adama, yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah. I think he's on loan from...
Villa,
but he came through Barca,
yeah.
He's handy, but we should probably have enough. But then that's what Ben Davies is going to be up against, because he plays on the right of that attack. So, you know... This could be the big test for Ben Davies, couldn't it? The acid test.
I hope that is the acid test for Ben Davies.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I was going to say. Adama Traore is the hardest opponent he's going to face. And
we'll be all right.
I think we'll be fine.
Considering he's coming in from the cold, I think that's a big old test. If you were Karanka, I'd be telling Traore to get on Ben Davies that every chance you get. No?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I tried to do a Borough preview there. That was fucking terrible.
I mean, it's actually it's just turned into a... You're just slating Ben Davies more, haven't you?
You're just using it to push your anti-Davies agenda.
I do have an anti-Ben Davies agenda. I don't like Ben Davies.
Why not?
Because he's
a nice bloke.
Oh, I'm sure he is. But Janssen's a nice bloke. He's supposed to be the nicest bloke at Spurs, but doesn't really change much.
No.
He's got bad hair as well.
Not bad or got
I
bad.
Don't like Ben Davies' hair.
No?
No. As a man, it's, you know...
As a man who's
versed,
into his hair, yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. We'll move on. Let's do some transfer window, because it closed actually the night of the game against Sunderland, didn't it? And Poch made a joke of There's 40 minutes left unless I get back to London and there's a present waiting for me. There's no business. But I'm surprised Sky Sports didn't pick up on that. Like, Poch drops hint. Present. You know, like, don't go to bed yet. That's always that great line on transfer window. The only business that we did was selling Tom Carroll to Swansea for $4.5 million. And Dan, you've put here that he's got a 50% sell-on clause and that you've got some ITK. So this is a first for the Tottenham way.
No, the 50% sell-on clause is the ITK.
Oh, I thought there was some ITK about that. Sorry, I would have let you break
No, that is fine.
Sorry, you shouldn't have put
that
in there.
No, I put that on there because I think a few people were saying, well, for a young English midfielder, 4.5 million is cheap. But I think, I don't know that for a fact. I've heard the club's kind of hoping that, I think the club quite rated Carroll, actually. I think Pochettino thought he was quite a good footballer, yeah. Okay. And the idea was that sort of sell him and maybe hope that he does get a sort of bigger money move in the future and then make a bit more money that way.
Okay, fair enough.
I've seen a bit of Swansea. Well, I saw him against Liverpool anyway, and he played really well against Liverpool.
Yeah.
He was really good.
He was never that, you know, explosive player that I think that we all love to have in central
the
midfield.
The cross he put in for Llorente was
and the run he had for Sigurdsson's goal as well. Like, he's a decent footballer. It'd be interesting if it's a 50% sell on. It would be interesting to see who buys him if Swansea were to go down, but how much we would actually make off of that.
50%
money to be made. Yeah, but. Sake, you've made profit. Do you think there was anything Spurs could have done?
I mean, maybe. I didn't think that there was much they could have done, but I was a tiny bit disappointed they didn't. I don't know, really. I think we've just mentioned the Ali deal as potentially the deal of the century, and it works so well for Tottenham. I did think they might be looking at that guy from Everton sign, Ademola Lookman, who obviously came from Charlton, would have surely preferred to stay in London. And you could have done, maybe they could have done a deal, relatively inexpensive, loan him back to Charlton and he could have come in the summer. And it's all, I know that money's tight and Pochettino is very particular, but I feel like these deals are almost, you almost can't lose on them. When it's a young English player, and you're paying between 5 and, say, 12 million, you're going to get that money back from someone after...
Tom Carroll being a... I know he's signing,
you know, you're going to get that money back from someone if they have 20, 30 performances, unless they're absolutely dreadful, which it doesn't look like this guy is because he scored in his debut and by all accounts he's a really bright player. So I would have liked to... I feel like there was nothing going on at the club. You know, as a journalist... You I was trying to find stuff out, and it was like the responses I was getting, and everyone was getting is like literally Spurs are closed for business this month. There's nothing happening. You know, if they got offered a Van der Vaart or a special player, a really exceptional circumstance, and they'd look at it. But on the whole, there wasn't any interest. And I think in a way, it would have been nice to see them sniffing around. You know, all this guy Sessegnon. From Fulham, for instance.
Left back.
Yeah, see if he could have been got for 5 or 10 million and then loaned back. Mm. A deal like that I would have liked to have seen, but in terms of bringing someone in to go straight into the first team or to even just improve the bench, I think it's so difficult in January. There's no value in the market, and Pochettino and Levy are all about value.
I think with signings like that, though, you can do them any time of the year. You can see.
It's true, but can you? I mean...
You can buy a player at any time. They just can't sign for you officially, can they?
I suppose, yeah. Mm. You could do the groundwork. But I just think that's the only sort of minor point or criticism I'd make, that it would have been nice to see the club explore a kind of similar deal to Ali.
Anything in the fact that Mitchell's no longer leading that that drive, if you like?
I don't think there's much in that. I think history won't be particularly kind on Mitchell. Thinking Kudus was his player 100%.
That's enough to negate everything else, I suppose, isn't it?
And I don't think he's a big loss to Tottenham. As far as I know, he's still working there, but not doing a great deal.
Who is leading that area now, it's not.
Well, that's a bit of a grey area.
That's what I mean.
Yeah,
is it
is a bit of a grey area.
Maybe the fact that we've not got anyone, there's no value in January. No one's going to come to you and offer someone, so we haven't done anything for the last 6 months. You know, that black box is just gathering dust, if you like.
Mm.
Maybe that's why we haven't looked at an alley, just because we haven't done the groundwork for it.
Yeah, possibly. But I still like to think that, you know, we're three random blokes talking about this guy. You know, it's not like Tottenham aren't going to be aware of him.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, maybe Pleat needs to get his boots on again. He apparently signed Ali, didn't he? David Pleat? Or he had a big hand in it?
Yeah, I think he had a part in it, yeah.
Fair play.
As did Sherwood, but no one wants to admit that.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. What part did Sherwood play?
I told you Sherwood wasn't all
I think
bad.
Sherwood had a...
He wasn't around for like 18 months before.
Yeah, but I think these deals take a bit of time, and I think he certainly watched Ali when he was at Tottenham.
I think Sherwood had quite a good eye for a player, actually.
And Eric Dyer as well.
Yeah. I guess
and he helped bring through Bentaleb. I know he's kind of gone. He did quite a lot with the youth coach side of things, didn't he?
All right, no. I think we
should get him back.
Yeah, head of recruitment. Just a quick final question. We've run out of time for listener questions. Sorry, I know some people sent them in earlier, but...
They were rubbish.
Had to let them go in the end. Did the Van der Vaart, we talked about Van der Vaart signing and kind of what a special player he was and how ridiculous it was that he was coming to Spurs. But do you think the signing of someone like Van der Vaart on deadline day, it was really late, wasn't it? Did that kind of fuck the transfer window for Spurs fans a bit? Do we expect maybe a bit more? Do you remember the Redknapp pod that we did last season? Like, well over a year ago now. It was us three and Jim. And we talked about Van der Vaart, how it just fell into Redknapp's lap. Like, Levy was given the player and he was like, do you want him? And of course you say yes to that sort of signing. But it doesn't happen. Like, that's like once in a lifetime that happens, isn't it? When are you going to get a world-class team ringing up like someone like Spurs and saying, we've got a world-class player that's never getting in our team anytime soon. Do you want him for 8 million? Never going to happen again, ever.
I think the question cuts both ways, doesn't it? Did Van der Vaart make deadline day what it was? I mean, it was one of those kind of magical moments, if you like.
Mm.
But Spurs have done other business. I mean, Lloris came on deadline day, didn't he?
Yep. Dempsey.
Oh, that was a good one, wasn't it?
Yeah. So
it was almost as if we were fueled still by this. Yeah, we're Spurs, we do the last minute deals.
I mean, that's what I meant by they would only have done business if the special player became available. I think the club aren't naive enough to completely rule anything out, because you don't know when, I mean, a Payet situation or a Van der Vaart situation might arise, and then if that it's the player for you, then you got to go for it. But yeah, I think it did create an unrealistic expectation of deadline day.
It created Levy time. There was that you know, hashtag Levy time.
Levied.
Do you remember that?
I think we might have grown up. I mean, there was still Sissoko in the summer, which suggested that Levy hadn't particularly learned. But again, I think that was Pochettino driven. But I think deadline day now has just become almost become an invention of Sky Sports. I mean, no one really... I was in the press room at Sunderland and got there really early because I had to got a train up and I didn't want to cut it fine. And there was like the Sky Sports guy in there and sort of doing... I was sort of opposite him doing his piece, you know, live piece to camera. Like, I'm at Sunderland and... Like, just behind him, the Sunderland press officer was just like, yeah, nothing's going to happen. we're all done. Like, we're trying earlier today.
And they were, you know, one of the busier clubs.
He'd have been the first person to know that. Not to mug him off, because he's just doing his job, and presumably his producer was like, you need to sound exciting and keep this going. But he'd have been told on arrival at the Stadium of Light, nothing is going to happen. And yet he still had to stand there doing live pieces going, we're here and there's 6 hours left, you know.
Till 11 as well. We would have been there late.
It is all a load of nonsense.
Mm.
And there was someone outside, the Spurs press team was sort of having a bit of a chuckle about the poor bloke who was standing outside Hotspur Way. They were all there in Sunderland, and this bloke was standing there. There was no one in Hotspur Way at all.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's a bit of a ridiculous fad.
Yeah, it is just ridiculous, isn't it?
I hate it.
Do you hate it?
It's ridiculous.
You used to like it, but it is, once you realise that...
It's kind of eaten itself, hasn't it?
People used to like take days off work and stuff, yeah. Allegedly.
Madness. Yeah. No, I know.
Only a few.
For the Ryan Babel in a helicopter stuff. Because there was a golden era for it. It was like when Arshavin came in.
Odd and Wingay was a good one as well, wasn't
it? Odd and Wingy driving to QPR, was it? Or the other way round. Ryan Babel in a helicopter. There was something about us signing David Villa as well. Like, he was at an airport and there was this picture that was circulated on Twitter of him walking through with his bags. And it was from like 2 years before in South Africa. And it's like, there were people like studying the photo saying like, no, it's like daylight outside.
It was the Huddleston tweet absolutely as well, wasn't it?
I can't believe he's just walked through the door. Yeah. And they buy into it. They don't give a shit, do they? So, yeah. Okay, let's round this up. Ollie, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Happy birthday for tomorrow as well.
Thank you very much.
My snowflake. Dan Kilpatrick, as ever.
Thanks, mate.
We'll be back next week with a Borough review and a preview of the next Premier League game, which I do not know what it is.
Liverpool.
Of course it is. Yeah, Liverpool away. Okay, that'll be a good one. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll see you next time. Have a great week. Bye. Say bye.
Bye, goodbye. Bye.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.